It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Fred Zinke. Matthew Leach is still away during October. He's doing terrific work helping our coverage with postseason action. So I'm happy to be joined for a second straight podcast by Al Melchior. Al, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Glad to be back on.
Yeah, are you enjoying the postseason action? Because I have really enjoyed this October's game so far.
Yeah, and I have a lot of great series, particularly enjoying Astros-Yankees. I will admit I've got a bit of a rooting interest for the Astros, so I'm not pleased by the turn of events, but they've been great games.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning Astros, too. I think probably a lot of people who aren't if you're not a Yankees fan, you're probably leaning Astros. But I will say this, as far as Yankees teams go, and I know we're not jumping right into fantasy, this Yankees team is kind of cool because it is new and exciting with Judge and Sanchez and Severino. You know, it is being led by some really fresh faces. So if the Yankees pull this series out, and at the moment we're recording, the Yankees are up 3-2, they are, I think, an exciting team. They would be an exciting team to watch against the Cubs or the Dodgers in the World Series, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no potential matchup that isn't going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to the World Series when we get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. The final four teams this year, like, just star-studded all the way around. So, you know, I mean, those real out-of-nowhere Cinderella-type teams are fun, but then sometimes when they get to the finals in a sport, you end up being left with a lopsided final or, a final without any big names and things like that. So the fact that some really good teams with some really top-notch players have gotten this far means that we're in for probably a really dynamite World Series. Today, we're going to talk about 10 players, 5 hitters and 5 pitchers, who I've kind of picked out to put under the microscope based on things that happened during the season, but also really based on things that they've done in the postseason. And we'll really look at those players because, well, we talked earlier this month about how the postseason can be a bit of a landmine for fantasy owners as far as you don't want to overrate small sample sizes and memorable games in October. Sometimes we can use this as a reason to maybe take a more careful look at a certain player. And I'm going to start right at the top of probably all the postseason players in terms of fantasy value, and that's Jose Altuve. Now, we talked, Al, 2 weeks ago, and I believe we agreed that there's just no way you could take Jose Altuve over Mike Trout or anyone else over Mike Trout in a 2018 draft. Now, since we'd said that, Altuve's gone out in the postseason and he's played better at the plate than he even did in the regular season, and he's probably going to win AL MVP, and he's been even better in the postseason. He's batting .394. He has an OPS over 1,100. Al, I'm going to ask you one more time. Is there any chance you could consider Altuve first overall next year?
I just can't, and I'll heed your advice from a couple minutes ago to not invest too much in a small sample. Although, generally, all these hitters are facing some of the best pitching in the majors, so it definitely gives me a little bit of pause for thought. But when I go back and I look at this season, if Mike Trout had played as much as Jose Altuve had, if they had had a similar number of plate appearances, he would have beat him pretty handily. Trout would have beat Altuve pretty handily in homers, runs, and RBI, and it would have been a pretty close call and stolen bases. So that really just leaves batting average. And, yeah, I would give the edge to Altuve there, but it wouldn't be quite enough for me to give him the edge if I had the number one pick.
Yeah, now, I figured you were going to say that, so I decided I would come up with maybe a couple scenarios where to maybe muddy the waters a little bit. So I thought about the categories, and you're right. Like, Trout's probably, like, even with Altuve's power jump the last couple of years, Trout's still more powerful. Altuve does hit arguably in a better lineup, but that doesn't mean that he's going to compile more runs and RBIs than Trout, because Trout does quite fine in those areas. And the steals should be similar. Altuve's going to have a better batting average. The one scenario I thought about was, if you're in a three outfielder league, does the fact that Altuve's a second baseman, and there are a lot of those head-to-head three outfielder leagues out there, in a three outfielder league, would you consider Altuve over Trout just because you're thinking about the quality of third outfielder you can still get in that type of shallow format?
No, but that's a great twist on this, and I'm very disappointed that I'm you know, predictable enough that you were able to foresee my exact response. But I think the outfield pool looks a little better to me now than it did back in March, because I just thought, you really have to snap up the top outfielders because there's just such a drop off in quality. But it's not so much, I don't think of it so much in terms of, who are you going to get to fill in that third slot? Because, yeah, I'm probably going to just stream that no matter what at some point during the season. But in terms of who I could get for the first outfielder slot, I still think there's quite a drop-off after about the first, maybe 10 or so outfielders, maybe even not that many. So I don't think that you gain that much in terms of position scarcity locking up your second baseman as opposed to your outfielder. So if it helps Altuve's cause, it helps only a little bit.
Yeah, and I think one of the kind of tried and true draft strategies that's really simple but does, and in the end, the more you draft, the more it does make a lot of sense, is, to when you pick those, that in first or second pick in your draft, just get the best player you can. Don't get too carried away with the positions. If it's an outfielder, that's fine. If it's a first baseman, that's fine. Just get a real stud player that you feel that you can build your team around. I will say one other positive thing about Altuve, and that's that, remarkably, he's never been on the disabled list, which is pretty cool. Now, Trout obviously had the injury this year. I'm not willing to label Trout at all as injury prone. That's a one-time thing, I really think, for him. But another feather in Altuve's cap is that he has never been on the DL. Al, do you think in most league formats that his postseason performance is kind of, combined with what he did in the regular season, is kind of locking up Altuve as the number two pick, though?
I do think so. I mean, I think he should have been locked in there before the postseason. And again, I agree with what you said, that I just think that these postseason numbers, I mean, I'm trying to think of the scenario where it really should make a difference. And we're going to talk about Aaron Judge later, so I think maybe that's a case where maybe a red flag is raised. But for the vast majority of players, I just don't think that the postseason numbers should sway ADP one way or another.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Aaron Judge right now, so that's a great segue bringing me over there. And there's some positives and some negatives with Judge in the postseason, a really big negative. So first, the positives. He has, in 11 games, he has 3 home runs. He has 10 RBIs. He has 8 runs scored. And runs scored is one area that Judge was quietly really, really good this season while everyone was talking about the home runs. But Judge, in 49 plate appearances in the postseason, has struck out 24 times. And that strikeout rate was the cause for his struggles, in the second half until he caught fire in September. So kind of coming out of the All-Star break through to the beginning of September, he was really struggling with strikeouts, and that was affecting his fantasy value a lot. Now, we discussed him last time as a potential 2018 first-round pick. Do the strikeouts in the postseason, do they dull your enthusiasm on Judge? Like, do they make you feel like he's a second-round pick, or are you willing to look past them because of the small sample size and the type of player that he is?
I think this is a case where it sways me a little bit. And look, I think, talking about Judge as a first rounder, I mean, I thought that was kind of, I don't recall what I said at the time, but certainly right now, I think he's, a marginal choice for late first round at best. But, so given that he was kind of skating on thin ice as a first rounder to begin with, I will admit the strikeouts worry me a bit, and I know the comparisons with Giancarlo Stanton are really overdone, but I'm going to go ahead and make that comparison one more time, because when I see a stretch like this from Aaron Judge, it reminds me of stretches I've seen from Stanton in the past. And last season, he had a stretch between May 6th and May 22nd where he struck out 29 times in 63 plate appearances. And it really hurt his overall numbers a lot because he was pretty good in the other portions of the season. But just those couple of weeks, 2 weeks plus, really hurt Stanton's number. And he finished with a 240, 326, 489 slash line. So that's obviously nowhere close to what you want to see from a first rounder. So, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of Stanton and Judge. So, yeah, seeing that potential for a 2 or 3 week deep slump from Judge next year, that, I think that's enough to scare me off.
I think I'm still on Team Judge in the first round right now. A couple of ways that I think his value is a little sneaky, and I do recognize the batting average concerns, but 9 steals this season, which isn't nothing in an era where steals are really hard to come by. Like, if he can steal another 9 bases next season, that does separate him from those, like, 0 and 1 steal kind of players in my mind. I know it's not a lot, but, again, it's basically a third of what you're going to get from the real speed. It's a lot of the real speedsters like Altuve right now, so it's something. And then the other thing that I mentioned a little bit before is the runs scored. And this season, if you said going into the season that Judge would hit 52 homers and collect 114 RBIs, and then if you threw in that he would score more runs than he drove in, and he scored 128 runs, which is a product of him getting on base a lot, mm-hmm. being able to run a bit, and being in a good lineup. When I sit down to look at 2018 projections, if I'm feeling 45-plus homers and triple digits in runs and RBIs, I think then I'm willing to put him in the first round. But I do see the downside of Judge that he could bat 240 or something like that. Do you think his average could ever go lower than that in a full season?
Oh, I think it could.
Yeah.
I wouldn't draft him based on that, but I think that's within a reasonable realm of possibility for him given how much he strikes out. And again, I'm not even talking about how much he struck out in the postseason. I'm just talking about even during, you know, the regular season. So, I think it's a risk, and it's that level of risk that I think would scare me off from making him the first player that I'm going to pick.
Yeah, and I will say this about Judge. I'm coming to the opinion on him that I've had with other players in the past that you're either in on, I think for next year, you're either in on Judge or you're out. And what I mean by that is if you're in, then you're in. And when he has a time where he strikes out 24 times across 50 plate appearances, you're still in. You know, you're not selling low. You're waiting for the hot streak. I think you're either in or out on him all season. And it doesn't mean, I guess, that you couldn't buy low on him if someone was willing to get out. But if you're I guess what I'm trying to say is if you're going to go in, if you're going to pick him late in the first round, early in the second round, you've got to be able to ride this wave of months where he has an 1100 OPS and months where he strikes out a lot and bats 175 or something. Like, you're going to have to ride that wave and hope that the 50 homers are there at the end. The next player I want to talk about is someone that we haven't really mentioned much on the show all season, even though Marwin Gonzalez was one of the biggest surprises this year and had a fine statistical season. That being said, he homered just 7 times in the second half and has really struggled in the postseason. Al, what are you thinking about Gonzalez next year? Because he came into the year as someone who wasn't really on that mixed league radar at all, ended up being in every mixed league lineup. But this might be a case where a good first half kind of masks a marginal second half, and maybe is he at risk of maybe being overdrafted next year?
I don't think so. I think that the drop in the second half home run rate and, maybe the postseason, again, this is a case where maybe people put, you know, way too much stock in the postseason. And, of course, postseason's not over yet, but I don't expect that Gonzalez is going to be really hotly pursued next year, and I think I'd probably be able to get him in the late rounds of a 12-team mixed league, and if he's there, I will probably take him every single time, because while he didn't hit a lot of home runs in the second half, he had 22 doubles, so he was showing some power. It was a little bit more the line drive variety in the second half, but the hard contact rate actually increased in the second half, and I buy into the improvement for him. I mean, he's not too old. He's on the old side for being a breakout candidate, but he's not really too old for it to be plausible. And he hit with a much higher launch angle this year, you know, like a lot of players did, and really improved his plate discipline a lot. So the improved fantasy numbers were really backed up by some changes in approach and, things that showed up in the peripheral stats. So I'm buying in, and the only thing that would even keep me from being a little bit more aggressive in going after Gonzalez is, you know, the concerns over playing time. But that multi-positional eligibility with the production I think he'll give you when he does play, I think is going to make him valuable.
Yeah, and you hit right there with the multi-position eligibility. He will have as much position eligibility as probably any player on mixed league draft lists at the start of next season. He's not even someone who is going to need, who you know plays a lot of positions but doesn't play them all a lot, and he's going to need to build it during the season. Like, you'll be able to put him on opening day in a bunch of different spots in your lineup. And you're right, the walk rate was up this season. His BABIP was 343, which isn't crazy high. So there's reason to believe that he can produce a batting average, if not 303 next year, but like a helpful batting average. So if I said you 20 home runs next year, do you think that's appropriate, or are you thinking more or less? He had 23 this year.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think, I probably, if I were to take the over-under on this year's total, I'd probably take the under, just because he's only done it this once. But 20 to me sounds pretty much right on the nose.
Yeah, and maybe a 280 batting average, do you think, or 285?
That sounds like the right range. So you sound like somebody who, you know, might do projections every year.
Yeah, yeah. And with projections, you kind of do this where you look at the high end, you look at the low end, you try to find a comfortable landing spot. And yeah, so I think if you pay for 20 home runs and a 280 average and a handful of steals, because like I mentioned with Judge, like Gonzalez, 8 steals this year, 12 the year before. So you could count on him for, you know, more than 5, let's say, comfortably, and maybe even 10 steals next year. So, if you pay for 20 and 10 and a 280 batting average, then I'm okay with it. And that multi-position eligibility helps. So we're not too carried away with his postseason. How about Greg Bird's postseason to jump back to the Yankees but stay in the same series? Now, Bird missed most of the season. Fantasy owners were a little excited about him before he ended up being injured before opening day. But he came back. He went deep 6 times in September. He's already homered 3 times in the postseason. So that's 9 since the beginning of September, against some pretty quality pitching in the postseason as well. Do you think he hits 30 homers next year?
Yeah, I would say I think he will. I think he will. I mean, he's perfectly suited for Yankee Stadium. You know, lefty with extreme fly ball tendencies, who also pulls the ball more than the average player. So that's a pretty nice combination for where he plays, and it's just a good division in general for power hitters. So I think 30 home runs for him ought to be a cinch, really.
Means he's draftable in every league next year.
I think so, but I think as a late rounder, and I have to wonder if maybe his stock will get a little overinflated. He's not hitting for average in the postseason, but again, the power is probably drawing some attention. But, you know, if you look at the profile that he's got, both in terms of the numbers he's put up as a major leaguer so far in parts of 2 seasons, and how he produces those numbers, again, you know, hitting a lot of fly balls, not really making a whole lot of contact. I think if he doesn't cut back on his strikeouts next year, you're going to see numbers that are probably better run production numbers, but otherwise numbers that are pretty similar to, like, Logan Morrison this year. What I would think of as like the Logan Morrison, Lucas Duda kind of profile, with a low batting average, decent OBP, good power, definitely some potential for run production. But at first base, as much as that position has really improved and filled out this year, I don't think that makes Bird any better than a late rounder.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. There's so much power right now that even if you're expecting 30 homers and 80 RBIs, something like that, maybe even 85, if you're expecting a batting average in the 240, 250 range, then, yeah, in a lot of mixed leagues, that would push him to the late rounds. And I don't think we're at the point yet where we feel like we can expect a higher batting average, correct?
Yeah, I certainly don't.
Yeah, that would be the next step, is if you felt like he could hit 280, because not only would that help his average, it would, and his help in that category, but it would obviously help him to drive in and score more runs. So now, after we spent a lot of time on the American League side of the championship series, we're going to talk about one hitter on the National League side. And I think a lot of listeners right now, if I gave them 5 seconds, while I finish this sentence, they could probably predict who I'm going to bring up. And I'm going to bring up Yasiel Puig, because he just draws a lot of attention to himself. But beyond that, he's playing really well in the postseason. And I don't think I ever thought I'd ever use the words Puig and quiet in the same sentence. But I'm going to say that this season, I think he kind of, in fantasy circles, quietly produced 28 homers and 15 steals, which is a pretty solid season, and I didn't hear a lot of discussion about him. So, Al, where are you at with Puig? Like, was the 28 homers, 15 steals, is that as good as it gets with him? Do you think there could be another jump in his production next year? Like, is this someone who's starting to figure it out?
maybe he is. And, you know, I think with players like Puig, where, you know, they bursted out, at a very young age, had a great, first, partial season with the Dodgers and built up really high expectations. And then not just in one season, but multiple seasons, really failed to come even close to live up to that. I mean, to the point where the Dodgers were trying to trade him. He wasn't really a regular at times last year. So really, much lower expectations. So maybe unfairly, I don't expect Puig to have a next level breakout. And I think it's just expectations. I didn't expect him to have this year's breakout. So I'm thinking that maybe a repeat is the best that we can expect. And he's going to be 27 next year, so it wouldn't be impossible for him to break out, but I also don't expect it to be super probable either for Puig to hit another level at age 27. And I have real doubts about him having any more upside in terms of batting average, because he's generated the power that he's had this year by pulling the ball more. Grant, he has also made contact at a higher rate, so that's good to see, and that helps a lot. But I just don't see him as really any better than like a 260 hitter, 260-ish.
Yeah, no, his BABIP this season was down to 274. In his career, it's 324. But do you think the drop in BABIP is related to pulling the ball more?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a great example of where a little extra analysis, like surface, I can't say BABIP's a surface stat, but it is a little bit in fantasy analysis, and you kind of look at it and think, oh, the batting average could come up, but if he's pulling the ball more, then that's actually maybe more likely that could be a new BABIP, but going forward for him. But yeah, there are some positives there. His walk rate went up this year. As you said, he's making more contact. He's striking out less often, and a repeat season would certainly be totally fine. If we're just confident that it's a repeat season for Puig, then that's pretty good, because this was a pretty good jump for him. And he's at an age, where he can sustain it.
Yeah. And again, I think so much of this is perception, and, maybe even just change the name of the player. And maybe, yeah. You think you could be more optimistic. But I just think this pattern of, a real sort of deep trough there for a couple of years, it just seems risky to expect something better next year.
Mm-hmm. Before we go on to the pitchers, I want to remind our listeners about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Last week, Jonathan caught up with several top prospects who are participating in the Arizona Fall League, including some top 10 names on the Giants, the Mariners, and the Dodgers farm systems. To hear those interviews and more, search for MLB Pipeline in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and click subscribe. And now we'll get on with the show. Before we do, I will say that the offseason is a great time to catch up with prospects and start figuring out which prospects should be on your draft list, which ones could debut in the majors, which ones you can stash, maybe which ones you should just monitor as a potential midseason call-up. So this is a great time to catch up with Jim and with Jonathan. And now that, we're doing some Arizona Fall League right now, but pretty soon it will all be done with prospects for the season, and start to get your head around some of those names just so that you have them for the late rounds of your drafts. Anyways, let's get on with pitchers. And the first one I wanted to mention was only in the postseason for a really short amount of time, but it's John Gray. And Al, Matthew and I have discussed John Gray a lot. Matthew is generally pessimistic on Rockies starters, and I don't blame him. I can sometimes get suckered in a little bit to them, but I'm probably more pessimistic than average. Gray struggled in his only postseason start, and it was not at Coors Field. It was at a tough place to pitch in Arizona, but it wasn't at Coors Field. And he had a 4.06 ERA on the road this year and was actually better at home. So that's a little confusing. Al, what do you think of Gray for 2018? Like, is this guy an every week, starter in 10 and 12 team leagues? Is he a mix and match starter in 10 or 12 team leagues? Like, how much are you willing to pay for Gray, knowing that he's still going to be, almost certainly still going to be part of the Rockies next year?
Yeah, well, I do think he'll be mix and match next year. But that said, I mean, there's guys who mix and match, and you're going to bench sometimes. But they're going to be somebody that you want to draft and somebody you're going to want to roster all season long. And then there are the guys that you can stream because they have profiles that are you know, pretty similar to other pitchers that are available, and you know, so you can let them go after they've had their favorable matchups. And I would definitely put Gray in the first category. He's somebody I would want to draft next year. And I'm glad to actually be sort of the counterpoint to you and Matthew, because I was really intrigued by the Rockies' rotation this season. I don't know exactly what they figured out or if they figured something out, but you know, you had several pitchers that, at least at different points in time, were really intriguing. I've really got kind of a thing for Tyler Anderson, if he can put it all together. Kyle Freeland at times was intriguing. German Marquez. So, you know, these are all guys. I mean, I probably won't draft any of them other than Gray and maybe Anderson. But Gray, you mentioned the road splits, which are, but another split, his last 13 starts, he did not give up more than 3 runs in any of them, which is pretty incredible. And he had a 2.64 ERA over that 13-start stretch. 8 of those were on the road. And here's the thing that gives me enough skepticism about Gray to think, okay, he's not going to be a must-start guy next year. He had 5 home starts during that 13-start stretch. They were against the Phillies, Braves, Diamondbacks, Padres, and Marlins. And the start against the Diamondbacks was probably his worst start during that entire stretch. So
yeah,
he definitely got some help with the schedule during that stretch. But, you know, he's a guy who pounds the zone and has pretty good command, and I just think that can work, most places against most teams.
Now, a starter who, this is more of a big picture thing, and I know there's not an exact answer to it, but in general, so a starter who you were drafting with the intention of sitting him some weeks, how high among your starting pitchers could you draft him? Like, could he be your 4th starting pitcher? Would he have to be lower than that? Because typically, I would think with your first 4 starting pitchers, you're thinking pretty much every week you use them. So if you're thinking you're going to have to sit Gray some weeks, do you think you need 4 starters before you consider him, or could you consider him earlier than that?
I would consider him earlier. I would consider him definitely as number 4. Maybe in a draft where I've prioritized other things. In the last year or two, this seems to have happened a lot with me, where I go very late on pitching, and then I'm kind of having to go to a fallback option. It's not ideal, but I could even see Gray as a fallback as a number 3. But the ideal spot for him for me would be as a number 4. But then again, I typically do stream my number 4 and 5 starters, and even in one league this year, and it was one that made it as far as the league semifinals, I streamed all but my top 2 pitchers.
And now, I actually didn't plan on going down this path with Gray, but I also wanted to mention, do you think you'd view him differently in the deeper leagues? Because, like, you and I play in a lot of 15-team leagues, and the weeks where you'd have to sit Gray, if you're going to, or want to sit Gray in those 15-team leagues, it's a lot harder to find. Like, you're almost putting in maybe just a middle reliever who could get you 3 scoreless innings that week because you can't find a starter. As opposed to, is Gray maybe more desirable as a mid-round pick in, like, a 10-team league, which a lot of people play in, because you know it will be easy to find replacements when you don't want to use them?
Yeah, that's a tough that's a tough situation.
Yeah.
So I think just trying to imagine it, that I think probably in a 15-team mixed league, I would probably start him.
Mm-hmm.
I would think at least probably more than 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Where he only had a home start or a pair of home starts.
Yeah, and you might just decide in a 15-team league you're just going to roll him, and if he ends up with, and just hope that all told the ERA is under 4.
And, you know, again, let me get back to that late season stand for him. He had 5 home starts. 3 of them were very favorable. You know, 1 was kind of favorable, and then there were the Diamondbacks. And he didn't even have a terrible start against them. So, you know, if you figure, okay, maybe I'm just going to sit John Gray in the weeks where, you know, he's got the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks at home. Something like that. You're going to be starting John Gray a lot in the deep league at that point.
Mm-hmm. Moving on back now to the American League, and CC Sabathia. I really like CC Sabathia. I think he's a great story. I think he's overcome a lot, and I love how well he's doing late in his career. So he has a 2.30 ERA and 3 postseason starts, which is really impressive. But I don't want to get too carried away with that. But what I do want to point out with Sabathia is that in In a time now where we're struggling to find reliable starters and offenses up, he had a 3.69 ERA this season, and before we question that too much, he had a 3.91 ERA the season before that. So that's a 3.69 and a 3.91 across 57 starts. That's a lot of durability with the way injuries have been piling up across baseball in the past two seasons, and he's doing well against good lineups in the postseason. Have we hit the strikeout rate's not great, the whip's not great, but is Sabathia someone who you want to consider next year in 10-team leagues in your draft?
10-team leagues, probably not. I could definitely see using him as a streamer in those leagues. And I do see him as a potential late rounder in a 12-team league because he's part of a group of pitchers that just fascinated me this year who didn't have great strikeout or walk rates, but you know managed to get wins and not hurt you in ERA. Sabathia was one of those, and you know, the common link between almost all these pitchers is that they just have really good command and are able to locate the ball where it's very hard to make hard contact on it. He had a 2.9% barrels per plate appearance rate, which was definitely among the lower rates in the majors. And only Kyle Hendricks allowed a lower average exit velocity than Sabathia among pitchers that had 400 batted ball events against them. That's pretty impressive company, and it definitely backs up his ability to prevent runs even when he wasn't missing a whole lot of bats.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, so if I say to you that he'll have an ERA over or under 4 next year, I feel like instinctively I would take over 4, would you? I know, it's really hard to decide. It seems silly to take over 4 for a pitcher who's been under 4 the past two seasons. I will say that his FIP was over 4 each of the past two seasons. Given his age, I just feel like over, and the whip the last couple of years, I feel like over 4, but at the same time, I guess around 4 is the right answer, isn't it?
I think so. You know, it depends to, you know, where he's pitching next year, I think. But the fact that, you know, he's built a baseline as a Yankee doing this, that's why I'm really leaning towards taking the under. I'm leaning pretty heavily.
Oh, good.
I'm talking myself into it, Fred.
Yeah. Well, then I start to get him more, I guess not must draft, but like getting close to must draft even in a 10-team league. If you're looking at an ERA in the threes and he's pitching in front of a team with a really good offense and he's been really durable, you know, he's averaging basically 29 starts the past three seasons, then, you know, I start to think, I don't know, total must draft, but I think he's getting pretty close. Anyways, I just think it's pretty cool because Sabathia had become a bit of a forgotten man in fantasy circles for good reason going into the 2016 season, and I love it when players bring themselves back. And someone else who brought himself back this year is Dallas Keuchel. And Al, you and I have both had a lot of interest in Dallas Keuchel at times in his career, a lot of times in his career, but he wasn't great in the second half. After you traded him to me, by the way, I'll mention in Tout Wars, 4.24 ERA in 12 second half starts, 2.60 ERA in the postseason. Wasn't great against the Yankees last time out, but overall he's been good in the postseason. Where do you think he belongs for 2018 teams? Is he a number two? He's not an ace, I think. Is he a number two? Is he a number three?
I think he's a very high-end number two. And frankly, if the perception of him were better and the demand for him were greater, I'd probably say low-end ace, but I know that I don't have to draft him as an ace. And just to give you an example of how underrated he is, he finished, according to the ESPN Player Rater, 17th among starting pitchers in roto value, even though he threw only 145 and two-thirds innings this year. 17th. So he was a top 20 starter with a bit to spare, despite missing a big chunk of the season. And then in the two early mocks that were run recently by Justin Mason of Fangraphs, he averaged across four different mock drafts 19th among starting pitchers in draft position.
There you go.
So he had a lower ADP there than he did in roto value when he missed a big chunk of the season. So that to me just says he's extremely underrated. I think he's borderline top 12. And yet he's barely being drafted as top 20.
Interesting. So now I said I like Keuchel as well, and I did trade for him from you this season and drafted him in another league, the Yahoo Friends and Family League. I drafted him and held him all season. I will throw some negative thoughts about Keuchel out there, though, if I wanted to just play devil's advocate for a moment, and that's He did win 14 games in 23 starts. That's probably not really a sustainable, but even if you're pitching well, that's, you know, that's like the 20-plus win pace. So that's a tough one to maintain. His BABIP allowed this year was 257, and his career is 294. So maybe unless he was getting even more weak contact than usual this season. And the other one I was going to throw for this season is a 290 ERA, but a 3.77 FIP. And in his career, Keuchel's been someone who his ERA and his FIP are almost the same over his career. Even when he had those really stellar years, he didn't have the gap between the ERA and the FIP that he has this year, where it's almost 90 points this season. So if we were talking, let's say, just looking at him for an ERA for next season, do you think 3.5? Do you think that's kind of where you'd sit with him?
I'll take the under on that. I think he'll be probably right around 3, just like he was this year. And, you know, in terms of, you know, some of those indicators that, you know, might point otherwise, I think he's going to be somebody who's going to underperform, or I should say overperform his FIP, because he is really good at generating a lot of soft contact, and FIP isn't really going to pick that up. So he had a very low BABIP this year. He had a very low BABIP in his Cy Young season. He didn't last year, but he was hurt. So the 2 healthy seasons out of 3, I'm going to buy into those numbers. And, you know, I just think with all the ground balls he generates, you know, good control, great command, I think he's going to continue to put up an ERA right around or just under 3 and probably be very underrated.
Yeah, and if I am going to throw out now that I said some negative things, and now people can see, they'll say, why is Fritz, he's spinning me in both directions. Like, what's his plan here? And the truth is, I guess I'm painting the picture of what we go through when we try to rank players, where you can see some positives, some negatives, and you have to even it all out. So now I will say a couple positives about him. In the last 4 seasons, he has an ERA under 3 in 3 of them, which is pretty darn impressive, and a WHIP below 1.2 in 3 of them. So sometimes you can look at the numbers and just say, if you throw out that injury-plagued 2016 season, yeah, he has been a sub-3 ERA in all those other seasons. So it might be fair to count on that. Someone who was really consistent prior to this season, but not really consistent this season, is Jose Quintana. Quintana had kind of become, for fantasy owners, kind of like an old reliable. He didn't win a lot of games, but every year you got that, you know, low to mid 3s ERA. And then this season, a 4.15 ERA and a 1.22 WHIP. So the WHIP's in line with his career norm, and the strikeout rate was up a bit this year, but a 4.15 ERA. He was better with the Cubs than he was with the White Sox, but he still wasn't a low 3s ERA pitcher with the Cubs. Now, he has been fine in the postseason. Do you think Quintana goes back to being a low 3s ERA pitcher next year?
I don't know about that. He was somebody that I had on bust list this year. He was in my the bold predictions piece that I wrote for FanGraphs, saying that he would have his highest ERA since his rookie year, and he just had his highest ERA, period. And part of what I thought was going to happen did happen, which is that he regressed in terms of his strand rate. But like you said, he was better with the Cubs. So, you know, I'm going to put the brakes on my own expectations of decline for him and say that I think that, you know, he's in a better venue, he's in a better environment for wins, obviously. And a better environment for not giving up home runs. So I'm not sure if Quintana's going to maintain the gains that he made in strikeouts this year. To be honest, I don't really understand where that came from. But, you know, I think just being with the Cubs is something that helps his value. And he improved his control after the trade, too. So in that sense, he was back to normal, and I think he will be for the most part next year, if maybe just a little bit higher in ERA.
Yeah, and some of the strikeout gains did come with the Cubs. His strikeout rate was up with the White Sox, but then jumped even more when he was with the Cubs. Maybe could be a bit undervalued. I mean, I know he's having a good postseason, but I wonder if he could maybe be a bit undervalued next season, just in the sense of now that he's with the Cubs. If he can get back to that sub 3.5 ERA, now he's on a team where maybe he could win some more games. We'll see if that happens. But he did get 7 wins in 14 starts with the Cubs. I know we can't put a lot of stock into wins per season, especially wins per partial season. But it does make some sense that the Cubs, I don't think anyone would argue that the Cubs, 2018 Cubs, will be a better team than any team he's pitched for a full season in the past. So maybe he has some potential there to win 15 games next year. if he can keep that ERA in the mid to low threes. And the 10th and final player that I wanted to bring up is way off the radar for a lot of fantasy owners, but I started to pick up some more interest in him late in the season. He's been great in the postseason as well, and that's David Robertson. So he was a top 10, top 15, depending on what rating system you look at, reliever this year with just 14 saves. He also got 9 wins. He had low ratios. He almost reached 100 strikeouts. If Robertson's a setup man again next season, Al, how deep would your league have to go before you actually consider drafting him?
I would say probably 15-team mixed. And he certainly did stack up well against, non-closers. And, of course, he did, close for a portion of this year. But if we look to him next year as a setup man, he certainly stacks up pretty well. I would rather have Chad Green, though, if I'm going to go that route, particularly if it's, maybe like a 14-teamer or maybe even a 12-teamer. Because I think Green's got a better chance in the role that I would anticipate him having to vulture some wins and maybe just get more strikeouts and put up better ratios than Robertson, wins aside. So, I mean, there's a handful of guys. Kirby Yates put up some really nice numbers this year. So, there's always pitchers in that role who emerge who can put up numbers kind of like the ones that Robertson did this year. So, maybe somebody I'm not even thinking of right now that I might be able to pick up off of waivers, and I wouldn't necessarily need to use a draft pick to get Robertson's ilk.
Yeah, in the past couple of years, so Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller have kind of been like the gold stars, I find, in drafts among the middle relievers, where they don't go into the season with a closer's role, but, they're going to get put up such great ratios and so many strikeouts that people want to draft them anyways. Now, Betances took a bit of a step back this season, as far as ratios go, 122 whip, which is something we weren't really seeing from him before, and his innings and strikeout total were down. An ERA up close to 3 this year after being over 3 the year before. Have you hit the point where you would prefer Green or Robertson over Betances?
Yeah, no, I definitely would going into next year.
Yeah, so I think, and something else that we're not going to get too deep into today, but with the rising ERAs kind of across baseball, and starters struggling and a lot of injuries out there, I think, and this is something that I'm going to delve deeper into in the offseason, but I wonder about the overall value of some of these really great setup men, like how Chad Green and David Robertson are more valuable. Like, this is just kind of a knee-jerk reaction on my part watching my teams this season. They're more valuable in an era where you're struggling to keep your team ERA under 4 than those stats were when your ERA was comfortably in the mid-3s, aren't they?
I don't know, because, again, I think that relievers, really, really good middle relievers, sometimes just emerge. Mm-hmm. So I think, to kind of answer the question broadly, having these types of players in general on your roster is more important. Yeah, I'll agree with that. Particular players like Robertson, is it worth targeting them, investing a draft pick, investing auction dollars on them? I'm not convinced yet, because maybe Jose Leclerc takes that step forward next year. Maybe there's somebody who just emerges, a rookie that we're not even thinking about right now, who has great strikeout stuff and good enough control to be helpful. I'll throw out a name, somebody I picked up toward the end of the season in Tout Wars, and then wound up not really helping me out the last week, but was sensational for, a couple of months before that, is Adam Morgan. Who would have thought, Adam mm-hmm. Morgan, but, the numbers he put up the last couple of months were right up there with the best middle relievers. Joe Smith, by the way, a guy who's been around forever and all of a sudden was a strikeout pitcher this year. So I think these guys sometimes, come where you least expect them, and you can count on enough of them to do that the value of any one particular middle reliever or setup man is, I don't think it's really any greater.
Yeah, you're right. The value of those stats is there. There may be enough sources of them, or sources that are very similar, or hard to predict the differences that will emerge between them, that maybe a better plan is to use that late round. Well, owners are going to have to decide, but maybe a better plan than taking Robertson in the last round or Chad Green is to take a starter who may really work out for you, right? Like, just, gamble on another starter and then decide that you'll, you know, with a plan in place of, you know, by the end of April, I will get rid of my starter that I value the least, whoever that is by that time, and then I'll pick up one of these relievers who looks like they're really, you know, going to have a great season, but still save that draft pick to try one other starter, because this year you could have used that pick on Luis Severino, right? Or someone of,
yeah, exactly.
Or someone like that, and you think, oh, Severino's not going to turn out. I'll just take Betances instead, and then you miss out on someone who would have been a complete game changer in your league. Like, maybe you're better to load up on a few Severino types late in your draft next year, those types of players that no one really wants but have some potential, with the plan of cutting one of them in 3 weeks and then picking up someone like Robertson. Do you think that maybe is a better plan?
Oh, I think that's an excellent plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking for a while for a postseason podcast, which I'm actually pretty excited about because I haven't talked baseball, you know, out loud with a lot of people in the past couple of weeks with fantasy season coming to a close. So, Al, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. You know, thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Al, for taking the time to talk. And, Al, enjoy the rest of your postseason action.
I plan on it. Thank you so much for having me on, Fred.